7141. Gail I. Officer, individually and as personal representative of the estate of Kenneth Paul Rosen, deceased, and natural mother of Seth E. Officer Rosen and Rachel K. Officer Rosen, minor, L. Appellant, versus Ghana Airways, LTD, et al. Mr. Gilman for the appellant, Mr. Marakis for the appellate.
May it please the court. We would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The Warsaw Convention enables international travelers to secure the benefits of the treaty regime, even for segments of international transportation wholly within the territory of a signatory with a tort system far narrower than that of the treaty. And that quote from Haldeman, we suggest, could just as well refer to this case. Three passengers were on a flight from Accra, Tamale to Accra, Ghana, and on Airlink 200 on June the 5th, 2000. The aircraft crashed on the runway in a torrential downpour. One passenger was Dr. Rosen, who was killed. He was among seven people who were killed on that in that accident, and that was therefore considered a fatal accident. There were two other passengers who are plaintiffs in this case, Megan Rosen, Auster Rosen, and Siddhartha Prakash, and both of them were seriously injured. Mr. Prakash was a World Bank employee. All the residents of the United States, and all had purchased round-trip tickets in the United States for passage from the United States to Ghana and back to the United States. Although the plaintiffs intended to purchase their Airlink tickets in the U.S., Airlink's policy prevented them from doing so. Airlink would not allow any purchases anywhere outside Ghana.
But their intention is not what's critical here, is it? The critical thing is what was the objective evidence? Did the parties agree that this was international travel, right?
Yes, but the question is what is the objective evidence, and whether or not that objective evidence is ambiguous. And that's the standard. Is the objective evidence ambiguous? And it certainly is in this case, because there is no way that the intent of the parties, the passengers, can be determined from failure to purchase their tickets in the United States, because they were not allowed to.
What evidence is there that Ghana Airways was on notice that the plaintiffs, in this case, would consider subjectively, whatever, that the trip from Tamale to Accra was part of an international travel?
Good question. First of all, in the case of the Auster plaintiffs, Dr. Rosen and his daughter, when they purchased their tickets in Accra, they discussed with the ticket agent what the best way to get back to meet their international leg back to the United States.
Of course, that's not evidence that Ghana Airways had any idea. That discussion was not, there's no evidence that was even conveyed to Ghana Airways.
Well, yes, but they were traveling on boarding passes issued by Ghana Airways. And Ghana Airways, because there was never any ability to discover this, nevertheless, Ghana Airways was either a joint venture or there was a cross agency between the two airlines, because Ghana Airways supplied the boarding pass. The ticket that Mr. Prakash used was actually obtained at the Ghana Airways ticket counter in Accra. So yes, there was a merger or some type of joint operation between the two airlines. So Ghana Airways should very well have known, plus the fact that the parties were leaving. At least the evidence is that the Austrian plaintiffs' parties were leaving on Ghana Airways. So Ghana Airways should have known. Yes.
Is there any evidence about the why the man and daughter went to Tamale?
This is not on the record. I'd be happy to tell you.
No, it's not on the record.
Dr. Rosen had been in the Peace Corps, yeah. And he, I believe, had operated in Ghana, yeah. And had been he was going back to visit the areas that he had been in when he was in the Peace Corps.
Now, his daughter had been in the country since May, right?
She had.
Yeah.
She had. And she was teaching there, and she was providing English instruction for children, Ghanaese children, in Accra.
But in Accra, but not in Tamale.
Not in Tamale, no.
The trip to Tamale seems to have begun almost immediately after arrival in Ghana, is that correct?
Very shortly after for Dr. Rosen, and obviously for Mr. Prakash, because he was on a very tight business schedule.
But the departure time from Accra was several days after the scheduled arrival in Accra.
And there was a reason for that. As Megan Oster-Rosen stated in her affidavit, she was concerned that they might not be able to make their flight out of Accra for the United States if they waited until the last moment and took the last June 7th flight out of Tamale for Accra. So they took the earlier flight, and that was a discussion that they had with the ticket agent in Accra, and he was the one who suggested that they take the earlier flight.
Ms. Oster-Rosen,
for that reason,
was in Accra. Well, pardon me, was in Ghana at least. Had arrived in Accra almost 3 months prior.
No, his daughter was.
That's
yes,
what I'm saying.
I'm sorry, his daughter was.
Oster-Rosen was there almost 3 months prior to going to Tamale. Tamale, right?
I don't believe that's right.
There early March. Isn't that correct? I have March 8th.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I don't believe that's correct. I could be wrong. I just don't believe that's correct.
Would you see what you can find for rebuttal?
I will. I will.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
I'm curious. I've got some questions about the jurisdiction. What's your argument for why we have jurisdiction? It's Foreign Sovereign Immunity Act, right?
It requires looking at Article 1 of the Warsaw Convention, and Article 1, among other things, says that.
Foreign Sovereign Immunity Act. You've got to show us that we have jurisdiction under the Foreign Sovereign Immunity Act. How do we have that?
Under the Foreign Sovereign Immunity Act. The Foreign Sovereign Immunity Act has a bunch of exceptions.
Right.
And it's.
And what's the exception here?
That 1605A1, I believe, is the one indicated in my briefs,
Is that the waiver of sovereign immunity?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
So is your argument on jurisdiction based entirely on the fact that that because Ghana is a signatory to the Warsaw Convention,
it
has waived sovereign immunity? What provisions of the Warsaw Convention expressly waive sovereign immunity here? That's the standard under Amarada Hess, right?
There is none other than the fact that a government, it says right in the Warsaw Convention that government entities are also subject to the Warsaw Convention for international air travel.
Okay, because under Amarada Hess, the Supreme Court says, quote, nor do we see how a foreign state can waive its immunity under this provision by signing an international agreement that contains no mention of a waiver of immunity to suit in United States courts. Is there any reference in Warsaw Convention to waiver of immunity to suit in United States courts?
I believe under Article 2, Your Honor.
And what's the language?
The convention shall apply to transportation performed by the state or by legal entities constituted under public law, provided it falls within the conditions laid down in Article 1. It's Article 2, Paragraph 1.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will give you 2 minutes, Mr. Gilman, for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. I represent the appellees. Just on a question that Judge Ginsburg that you asked regarding, was March 8th that she did depart from the United States. It's at JA 372. We don't have the actual ticket, but we have a copy of Ms. Rosen's itinerary. Maybe I'll touch on the question regarding with respect to the FSIA. While Article 2 says the convention shall apply to state entities or operations by state entities, the most that can be read to mean is that the such an entity will be governed and subject to the same rules as any private entity. And one of those things under the convention that private entities would be subject to would be the issues of jurisdiction. While Article 28 of the convention does create treaty jurisdiction, there's a two-prong inquiry in the United States. One, is there treaty subject matter jurisdiction? And then the second, if there is, you look to, is there personal jurisdiction, minimum contacts? And that's how the Warsaw Convention and the FSIA actually complement each other. One only deals with subject matter treaty jurisdiction, and the other deals with the issue of minimum contacts. And I think the legislative history of the FSIA, as well as decisions interpreting it, saying when you have a waiver, it has to be an explicit waiver. And that word, I think explicit, appears throughout the legislative history and throughout the Supreme Court cases dealing with the issue of FSIA.
Let me ask you, since you brought up personal jurisdiction, you're arguing that there was no personal jurisdiction in your brief, and yet you waived that argument in the district court explicitly.
The issue of service. We did not contest service was proper under the FSA, but we never waived the issue of whether.
I looked at that. Where is it? Where exactly? I think the district court took it as a personal jurisdiction, though, didn't it?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because there was a big dispute in the lower court over the issue of whether service had properly been affected.
Right, yeah. I see it. It's on page 723. Joint appendix. Okay, so it's just the service of process.
That was the only thing that we did not contest, but we never conceded anything with respect to personal jurisdiction. And going back, shifting gears to the Warsaw Convention, I think the objective evidence is not ambiguous here. It's very clear. You have the ticket, which is the best evidence of the contract of transportation, gives you when the parties entered into the contract, where they were traveling, who the parties to the contract were, and it shows that it was purely domestic transportation. In fact, the ticket itself says domestic transportation. Unlike some of the other cases where they've analyzed this issue, whether it's the Haldeman case or the Robertson case, the factors that the courts look to, these objective factors, to the exclusion of subjective evidence, shows when you look at the time and place of purchase, it was that these two tickets were purchased at different times, different places, different travel agents. Significantly, the tickets don't cross-reference each other. There's no way with respect to when they were purchasing these tickets through the travel agent in Ghana that this travel agent would have known that there was other international transportation involved. With respect to Mr. Prakash, he never even had any contacts. Yes, sir.
Isn't that inconsistent with, I think Mr. Gilman told us, that the Ghana Airlines ticket agent issued the airlift ticket and or advised the plaintiff to leave a bit earlier than he or she might otherwise have done?
I think, no, Your Honor, I think let's take each of the passengers separately because it's a little, with Mr. Prakash, it's a little confusing because he submitted two different more or less contradictory affidavits. The first affidavit, the initial affidavit, he says that he picked up his boarding pass in Accra from the Ghana Airways ticket counter. Then he submitted another declaration that says he picked up his boarding pass when he was in Tamale from the Ghana Airways ticket counter. But the fact remains, the ticket was issued by a travel agent, not by Ghana Airways. At most, the evidence would show that he picked up his boarding pass from a Ghana Airways ticket agent, and that simply isn't enough to why would Ghana Airways have any knowledge of his international transportation? In fact, in the Kapar case in the D.C. Circuit, there was an issue there where World Airways was acting as just the agent for issuing, in that case, actually issuing a ticket. Here, you don't even have that. The most in the record in the evidence shows that Ghana Airways at Tamale simply provided plaintiffs with the boarding passes for their Airlink flight. But the boarding pass itself did designate, it said AL-200, designating the flight as an Airlink flight. With respect to the Oster Rosenbaum plaintiffs, while they may have mentioned it to the M&J Travel, the Ghanaian travel agent, there's no objective evidence that this, in fact, was mentioned. When you look to the Robinson case with respect to the imputation rule, there you had objective evidence in the records of the travel agents as well as the records of the airlines. In that case, it was British Airways and American Airlines, that they knew the existence of the entire itinerary. Here, when they may have mentioned it to the travel agent, that could be just like the district court found. They could have just been mentioning, saying, "Well, we know we want to get back to our. We have a flight back to the United States, and we just want to make sure that we're going to make that flight." But significantly here, the tickets that were issued to both of all the plaintiffs here had an open return date. So it's kind of there's a kind of a hole here that if it was so important for these
the tickets from Ghana Airways.
No, the tickets for Airlink, for their Airlink domestic flight. All those dates for the travel from Tamale to Accra had no date for the return date. It was an open return date.
Is that true of Mr. Prakash? You went only one way?
Yes, it was true for Mr. Prakash.
Are those tickets in the appendix?
Yes, they are, Your Honor. Tickets appear at JA-123 through 124 and SJA-13. And so that's very significant because when they had an open return date, if everybody needed to get back at a certain time, you would think when they had that conversation, and especially if they mentioned this to the M&J Travel, that they would have put in the specific return date at that point in time.
Where does it say open return?
One says open, one is just blank.
327, did you say?
The JA-123 is the Rosen tickets.
124 is the daughter?
Yeah, I think they're sequential, one after the other. And those two tickets, when it says the return date, it's just blank. There's no date on it.
Right.
But with respect to Mr. Prakash, I believe his ticket, which is at JS, the supplemental joint appendix, at 13, I'm sorry. I can barely read my writing. There it says, the date says open. But, of course, in the district court below, as we do here, we do challenge the whether even if they had told the travel agent of their intent to about their intent to go on with Ghana Airways, that whether you can properly impute that knowledge to the air carrier under the circumstances, and whether there was really any evidence of that when there's nothing in the record to show that Airlink knew of the Ghana flight, or let alone Ghana Airways was aware of it. In fact, there's no evidence that M&J Travel was an agent for Ghana Airways.
Where's the line that says open on JA-13?
It's the absence of a writing
notice. No, I think is this for Mr. Prakash?
Yeah.
If you look to where it says from Tamale to Accra, up at Tamale, flight, it has the flight and it says date and it says open.
I see. Yeah.
Now, wait a minute, you just said there's no evidence that M&J was an agent for Ghana Airlines?
Correct, Your Honor.
Did they issue a ticket on Ghana Airlines stock?
No, they didn't.
Boarding pass?
No, they did. The boarding pass was picked up in Tamale, and Ghana Airways had just given them a handwritten boarding pass to get on the flight. And it's not in the record, but my understanding was that Ghana Airways did this for almost every carrier at that airport.
Yeah, but
it's not a very large airport.
On the Rosen's tickets, though, if I'm reading them correctly, on the date, it's not blank. It's not open. It seems to say June 2nd.
Right, that's their outbound flight, Your Honor. That's when they were going from, because Mr. Prokhorst was only one way, and the Rosen.
Oh, to Tamale. Okay, but you gave us then the wrong tickets. You said 123 to 124?
Yeah,
That's the tickets to Tamale.
The Rosen's only, we only have the one ticket. It's all this. This is the only ticket that we have.
This is a round trip ticket?
Yes, that's a round trip ticket, Your Honor.
I see. Okay. So the next line down is
correct.
Got it. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, as you could see, the tickets that it's not they're not compu- there's no computers or with respect to this ticketing. This is a what happened was Ghana Airways used to operate domestic flights, and they ceased doing that, and that's where the AirLink came in, which is the Ghanaian Air Force. And they picked up the obligation, or they needed to have domestic transportation. That's why the Ghanaian Air Force stepped in. The government came in and performed this transportation, but they made a conscious decision only to operate domestically, and they did not operate externally, and they did not interline with any foreign air carriers or anything like that.
If AirLink is the Ghanaian Armed Forces operating a commercial airline, why isn't it within the commercial activity exception in the FSIA?
Because in this case, if they bought their ticket, there's no commercial contact with the United States. They didn't buy their tickets in the United States. They bought their tickets in Ghana, Your Honor.
In the United States, right.
Yes. If there are no further questions, that's all I have, Your Honors.
And the effect felt in the United States doesn't do the trick.
No, Your Honor. It's it has to have the that's that wouldn't fall within the direct effect exception.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
2 minutes. 2 minutes, yes.
So, Judge Ginsburg, you wanted me to answer a question, and let me do that. Dr. Rosen left, or I guess arrived in Ghana on May the 29th. Of 2000, and his daughter Megan arrived much earlier in the spring, I think in March. So that was the time frame. So Dr. Rosen was there only a few days before he went on his trip to Tamale and then back
right,
to.
So what is it about his daughter's arrangements that, notwithstanding a break of almost 3 months, suggest this is one continuous?
Well,
track?
As Judge King said in Gasca, and emphasized also Judge Knapp in Lamb, they both said basically that tickets are highly modifiable, airline tickets, and all she did is modify her airline ticket in order to go on this trip to Tamale and back.
She modified what ticket?
I'm sorry?
She modified?
Yes.
Ticket?
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, in Lamb, the...
No, in this case, on the facts here, what are you talking about? Well, she modified her ticket.
Her international ticket was from United States to Ghana, back to the United States.
Right.
She added another segment of it to go to Tamale.
Well, that seems a little conclusory. She bought another ticket. The question is whether they were legally linked.
Well,
isn't that right?
The ticket would have been bought in the United States if it could have been bought in the United States, but it was not. And the reason it wasn't is not because of the plaintiffs. It was because of the AirLink's policy of not allowing that to be done.
So when she left the United States for Ghana,
yes,
and arrived in Ghana on March 8th,
yes,
it had already been established that she would then. Was her intention to go to Tamale in June?
I don't believe that's true.
How could this be all one trip? I'm completely missed the point.
Because of the fact that in the Vergara case, for example, they changed the itinerary to avoid Kabul, which is under a revolution at the time. In Lamb,
yeah, I understand that, but here's a couple of months elapsed, and then she decides to go to Tamale.
Right. Well, yeah,
so
that's,
I just don't see how that's linked in any way to her trip to get into Ghana. She wouldn't have bought the ticket in the United States if she didn't already intend to go to Tamale when she bought the ticket.
No, although her father would have.
All right, well, so can we take her out of the case?
Well, if that's what you want to do,
well,
you do that.
I mean,
but
did you have anything else to link these two journeys into one when she decides to, on the second one at a later time, would not have bought them as an integrated ticket, even if she could have?
I'm not going to quibble over that. I just think that was a modification. If the owner doesn't believe that that's true, then that's the case.
When she bought her ticket to come to go to Ghana, whenever she bought it, was it a round trip ticket?
Yes.
Was it an open return?
No.
It was a return on June whatever.
It was June the 8th, actually, early in the morning at 1 o'clock approximately.
Thank you, Mr. Gilman.
Thank you, sir. And we would rely on our brief in support of our arguments. And we'd ask that the court deny the motion and remand the case for discovery and for trial. Thank you.
Thank you.